Link dedicated is the topic for our session. And before I actually introduce my colleagues here and myself, Sue, who heard actually about dedicated or link dedicated cloud before? Who is aware of the topic? Okay. Yeah. So who didn't hear about dedicated before? Maybe all aside. Okay. Got it. Well, in this case, I think you will get a lot of information about what dedicated is, how we actually offering cloud services in the next 75 minutes, and actually also what is the kind of integration that we're offering to our customers, and how do we differentiate between multi-tenant and dedicated and on-premise, and how actually you can access or how you can get actually link in all of the three different environments and different options from Microsoft for your company and for your needs. Before I actually continue, let me introduce my colleagues. So I'm actually on stage with Dan, Fernando, Andre, Thomas, and my name is actually Daniel, so I'm part of the product marketing team, and with the team actually here responsible for Link Dedicated. And, well, let's probably move forward. So for the next 75 minutes, what we want to cover is basically why is the topic cloud important, and what are we seeing as Microsoft in terms of the development? From customers that are using on-premise, that are interested in cloud solutions, and basically also why is Link Online Cloud very important? And what is the kind of opportunity and what are the kind of scenarios and features that we're offering around the Link Online topic? Another thing that I want to bring up is actually, I talked about features and functions. So basically the migration process, so we will show you more information about if you do not have dedicated, right, or if you do not have online today, so what would be a possible way from nothing or from on-premise to go into the cloud of Microsoft and to use Link, and maybe also some other products that we're offering in the cloud? Well, why Microsoft? So we will cover, of course, a little bit the business case behind and some scenarios, and of course, what's inside. So Fernando will drive you later through some features and capabilities that are part of the cloud today, and what's next. So, one important thing, when we are talking about dedicated and link dedicated, right, then it's a very specific topic, right? And we are addressing actually large customers with dedicated, right? So basically what we're having is multi-tenant. Office 365 is basically our public cloud. And if you go to the private cloud of Microsoft, then we're addressing with Link 30,000 users and more that actually can take advantage of our cloud solution in the dedicated space. So customers that usually are part of the dedicated deployment are multinational customers, multinational deployments. Customers in the government sector, also in a very high secure, very high compliance area, and customers that actually need a private cloud integration if they actually go from on-premise or whatever they have in their own data center into the cloud of Microsoft. So actually we're having international deployments, so we will talk about that later, and also the location of our data centers and actually how we handle the capabilities and the requirements from our customers. And basically, if you see here FISMA or ITAR, right, so this is enhanced compliance and security, and ITAR is basically all the customers that we're having in a private cloud in the government space. And we will talk about that in a detail or more detail level a little bit later. Okay, with that, let's probably start the way into the cloud. Let me say a couple words, right? So Microsoft's strategy is basically to add on more features, more capabilities for Link in the cloud, SharePoint in the cloud, Exchange, and a ton of different solutions that we're having, actually. And with Link, we're basically providing the opportunity to integrate in your environment, so that's basically on-premise, or actually to offer Office 365 multi-tenant, as I mentioned before, or actually to, in very special cases, so you have seen the profile before, to offer also private cloud integration with Link if we're talking about very large deployments and a very high secure and high compliant environments. So basically, that's a path, and this is a part of our strategy. And what you see in the Link roadmap with Link 2013 today, with Link Online, but also with the future versions of Link, is that we will complete more and more scenarios, more features, in the multi-tenant side, but also in the private cloud area of Microsoft. So to cover basically both needs of our customers. Excuse me. let's probably go here. So reasons why customers are actually going into the cloud, right? So there are a couple of different reasons. Security is one of that. Compliance can be one of that, right? But you see also cost is a very important topic, right? So if you're talking to our large customers, and also so I would say, actually also customers in the SMB space or in the mid-market space, then we're talking about cost, right? And especially the cost that, or actually the integration of the data center, right? All the servers that you're running, yeah? All the processes, all the additional tools, and of course the workforce that is needed to run a data center is quite a lot, right? So what we're trying to do with Office 365 and with our private cloud offering is basically to help customers to go the way to migrate whatever you have basically to our cloud environment and to run it with a lower cost, with a better ROI, and also in terms of features and capabilities to be able to update in a shorter cycle in terms of new scenarios, new features, new capabilities, not only on the Link side, generally on from the platform level, Link, SharePoint, Exchange, and all the solutions that we're offering in this space. Right? So that's one main reason. Another main reason is if you're working actually with Microsoft in this space, right, and you're not managing your own environment and you might be Office 365 customer, then a very important thing is that we are managing the infrastructure. That means we're managing the batching process, updating process, we actually migrating if there's a new solution available, a new version available, so we're migrating customers out of the box and the workload is not on your side. The risk is not on your side, so everything is actually managed by Microsoft or by our partner ecosystem, which is also part of the hosted offering. As I said before, right, so I don't want to confuse you, so there are a couple of different offerings, right? So I mentioned before on-premise, Office 365 multi-tenant, so we'll talk about that a little bit later, and of course the private cloud, so the dedicated space, which is basically a core topic of this session. So again, dedicated is for large customers, so if you're not already dedicated customer, you can be customer, we will talk about later how you actually contact Microsoft and what things you have to consider. And basically, if you are dedicated customers, you probably get some news in a session what we're doing with Link and also around the topic of voice. Okay, yeah, here are a couple of screenshots. So what I want to list down, when we're talking about cloud, there are different versions of cloud. I mentioned before public cloud, private cloud, next to on-premise, and usually those are the reasons that you see here in the slide why customers going for the public interface or for the public cloud or for the private cloud. So basically, what you can see is security is a very important thing, right, in terms of private cloud. Compliance, government regulation. So in some regions, customers actually, if they're talking about cloud or if they're interested in cloud, they actually have to think about a private cloud offering, for example, from Microsoft or from some other companies in the market, basically because it's law or it's a rule in the country or in the region in terms of the outsourcing of equipment, hardware, or services. Very often when we're talking about Office 365 multi-tenant cloud, then the cost efficiency, so the low cost of our services, right, in terms of what you pay per month per user, is a huge advantage for the business case, right? I don't want to say that multi-tenant cloud is not secure. It's very secure. But if you have special requirements in terms of compliance and security or regulations, as I mentioned before, then you find yourself maybe a little bit more on the right side here of the comparison between private and public cloud. Well, with that, then, maybe you want to talk about more about what are actually considerations for cloud generally?
Sure. I mean, we're all familiar with many of the buzzwords that go along with cloud computing. And when we think about Microsoft cloud offerings, whether it's Azure, Office 365, these are all foundational underpinnings of the cloud services we offer. When we begin to focus on the enterprise, you know, we begin to translate this into what matters to you. Next slide. And especially with our Office 365 offering for our largest tenants, whether they're in the public cloud or the private cloud, you know, the things that become important are the things that we have at scale with Microsoft. Things like globally redundant data centers, multiple regions of data centers, massively connected networks in the background as the backbone of transport between these sites. These are assets that we have that we already are going to have because of our internet properties, and we can leverage for the enterprise as well. Of course, we're deeply concerned about making sure that your compliance needs are met and demonstrating how we meet them. So we spend a ton of time across all of our online offerings, not just the private cloud offering, in investing in security and compliance and demonstrating that compliance. And then, of course, the scale that we have helps with costs. And that's important not just because we want to be a good global citizen, but we also want to be competitive. We want to make sure that Office is a bet that remains massively relevant, not just in terms of features, but in terms of price. And our scale allows us to help achieve that. Okay. In terms of security, this is something that really is top to bottom for us. This is right at the start of our development process. We've been living with security deeply in our code for about a decade. Every single line of code produced at Microsoft goes through a software security development lifecycle. And that's just the beginning. It doesn't stop once we release. Once we release, that's a continual compliance obligation that we have to meet on your behalf. And we do. We have an entire group of operations folks, not just in Office, but in Azure, in our data center, all focused on compliance, making sure that we're meeting not just the spirit of the controls, but actually demonstrating it and keeping your data secure.
Mm-hmm. So, please.
Well, I was going to ask. I mean, I'm familiar with Link Online and the services and scale that we have, but what are some of the other things going on at Microsoft that really tells the full story?
That's a very good question. So I talked about cloud before and about Exchange and SharePoint and Link, of course. So maybe a question to you. So how many cloud services does Microsoft have? What do you think? Just tell me a number. Three? Okay. Who goes? We are in Las Vegas, right? So you can go up and down. Right? 10? Okay.
By the way, the closest answer will win some Skype credits, so.
Okay. So let me actually show you. We have around 200 and plus different cloud services. So you're close, okay? You all get prizes.
Who is closest? Yeah. Come find us afterwards and we'll make sure you each get one.
Get something, answering. Right? So what I wanted to show you here basically is this is what we're actually offering as Microsoft. So it's not only about Office 365, right? I mean, you can see there's a very important part in terms of SharePoint Exchange and Link, and I want to say it over and over again because that's important. But you can also see Skype, right? We have millions of users on the Skype side. Oops, sorry. Bing, right? Xbox, right? So there are so many different areas. We're actually hosting our and providing through our data center or data centers actually services to customers in the consumer field, in the enterprise space, also to partners, of course, right? So we are very, we know our actually cloud really well and how to manage actually services with a very high SLA and also with a very high cost efficiency for our customers and partners. And if we're having a look right now on, so if you see basically the global availability, then you can see here, those are basically our data centers that you see here in the first range. The next part is basically, so you can see here we are globally, right? So every region from US, Europe, Southeast Asia, or Asia generally. Global support, of course. Give you a second to look through. Which means basically 4 or 5 nines of SLA, 24 per 7, per 365, more than 1 billion customer that we're actually managing through the data centers. Local account teams, that might be interesting as well because you might want actually to contact the Microsoft presence basically in your country or in your region, especially for the cloud topic. And I can see a couple of account managers from Microsoft, so I want to say that as well. And of course, the local currency, and that's a funny part, but it's actually important as well, because in the terms of Office 365, we received many times the question, so actually can I get charged in my local currency based on, you know, the accounting and based on laws and regulations and blah, blah, right? And yes, that's a very important thing. It's not something that everyone can actually offer in terms of currency support, the availability of the services, and how we run the data centers. And you can see a couple of numbers on the bottom. If you count everything together, then actually Microsoft offers more than 280 years of experience. I'm not that old, but you know, actually we're not together that old, of experience on how to run a data center and how to provide services to our customer. And if you are a dedicated customer or if you are interested to be a dedicated customer, that's a very important thing because that's trust. It's all about trust, right? How actually do you trust Microsoft in terms of that we run the service stable, secure, and also isolating data in terms of regional requirements or requirements per country and so on, right? It's a very important thing. Okay, let's switch a little bit to Link, right? So I talked to you about cloud, different cloud services that we're having, right? 200 and more and blah, blah. In terms of Link, right? So there are three different areas. And I mentioned it before, right? But again, so we have on-premise. We have actually Office 365 multi-tenants, basically for everyone. And in the middle, you can see actually the private dedicated space. And to be clear, right? So dedicated is something that we offering through Microsoft, but also through our partners. So very, sounds funny, but very dedicated partners that offering actually dedicated services. Right? And you can see here on the lower end, right? So if you are interested in cost efficiency, then it's basically the Office 365 multi-tenant cloud. If you're interested in all the additional requirements and security and compliance, in addition to that, what we're already offering in multi-tenant, then it's basically the kind of, I call it actually VIP offering, right? The extended offering. It's actually not anymore about cost efficiency. It's about regulations, compliance, and security, right? And of course, then there's on-premise, which is you run your own Link environment. Yeah, you can run it maybe in future in a hybrid environment with our cloud, but basically you build your own environment, you manage it as well. And a lot of customers actually going from on-premise at first, then afterwards into the cloud. And that happens on a multi-tenant space or on a private space. Okay. Why we are doing that, right? It's not only about security and some other areas, why private cloud or multi-tenant cloud is important. It's also about, you know, today, basically, if you see a new version or updates actually for Microsoft, you will see that in between 18 to 24 months cycle, right? So one idea what we can do and what we can offer in the cloud is basically to bring out shorter updates, monthly updates, right? And to actually increase the functionality of Link or of Exchange and SharePoint, whatever you actually use from the Microsoft cloud, and actually go into a cycle where you're adding on more and faster updates actually to our service that we're offering to you, right? So it's something that you don't have to keep care of because if you manage your own environment, this is something that you have to manage in your environment. But if you go to Microsoft in this case, then we actually taking this big workload actually away and we're doing that for our customers. Okay, to summarize, so what kind of cloud services basically do we have in Office 365, right? So I talked about dedicated. If I say multi-tenant Office 365, then it's basically the Office 365 here. Do you see on the slide? Or we have actually ITAR GCC, which is basically the government part that has some special terms and regulations and laws. And also for those customers, we're actually offering cloud services in the private space, right? Okay, so how many customers do we have in the private space, right? Basically, 2 million users are using actually private services for Microsoft, and we are having actually 46 enterprise companies trusting Microsoft and running actually private cloud services with Microsoft. Or actually benefiting out of that. It's a huge number, right? So there are large companies, and unfortunately, we're not allowed to see all the names, right? It's a very high secure environment. But those are international and very known companies that are using our service. It's a very important thing. And in terms of Link, it's basically a question for Dan, right? So why is actually Link interesting in the private cloud space? So maybe you want to talk about that in the next couple of minutes.
Sure. So Link in the private space, summarizing many of the themes we've already talked about, it's a faster way to get the servers deployed. It's really about bringing your clients. It's about letting us take on a good chunk of the administrative burden for you, simplifying that. It's about having some deployment flexibility as well. You don't have to completely abandon your PBX. You can certainly incrementally move pieces to the cloud. It doesn't mean that Exchange and Link have to go at the same time. The private cloud really allows a lot of flexibility there. We have the ability to extend your network into our data centers and really leverage the power of our networks on the back end while keeping the control within the boundary of your network. And then, of course, we have now more than quarterly releases. We actually have, in some cases, monthly releases, and we're very transparent about it. That white glove service allows us to invite our customers into special events, customer advisory boards, where they help influence us. I mean, if you think about the number of customers that we have in dedicated in the private cloud, today it's less than 50. That means each one of these customers has tremendous influence on what the private cloud looks like tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And we really, really listen to them. So this is one of the slides I was really looking forward to showing. You know, as an ops guy, there's two things that rule my world. The first is SLA, and the second is customer satisfaction. So I'm just putting a couple charts up here to help show that this is stuff we track deeply, trend deeply, respond to, and you know, it really shapes what we do on a daily basis, and you know, it shapes how we're going to deliver the service in the future. I also wanted to show a couple stats. I mean, we don't get to name customers, but you know that we have 2 million seats today. And I wanted to show a little bit about what those seats are doing. And if we look at the monthly usage, you can see a couple numbers there. And then in the highlights, you know, I think some of the things that jump out at me is already 1.9 million audio sessions a month. That's almost 2 million audio sessions a month. And most of these customers have not taken the full enterprise voice plunge yet. So they're really using the heck out of just peer-to-peer, multi-party conferences, and that's amazing. So the cloud isn't just IAM and presence when it's private cloud. We really help you adopt everything that's there, and the numbers show that it gets used.
Mm-hmm. And I wasn't surprised, right, because in a very positive way, because 521 messages a month, right? That's huge.
Yeah. And this even includes the couple folks that were still deploying.
Yes.
So they're pulling down the average a little bit, but if you look at the oldest customers, massive adoption. Over 85% of their seats deployed use Link not just for presence, but are actually doing voice video conferencing. Mm-hmm. So it's tremendous.
So now, of course, it's important when we're talking about on-premise and Office 365 and dedicated. So what are actually the features that we're offering in the different areas and different offers, right?
Well, it turns out this slide looked very similar on Sunday, but it actually changed on Monday. So we had an X for Office 365 public cloud with enterprise voice, but that's there now. Gurdeep just mentioned that that's being added in a big, big way beyond what we're doing today with our audio conference partners. So that's actually quickly changing to another green check mark. And really this slide is to help show that in terms of core features, really, all of these solutions are fine, right? They're all giving you the possibility of core features. The decision for a private cloud or a public cloud or cloud in general is really going to be based on other business needs and requirements. You know, do you want that control on-premise? Do you still want a high degree of control, but you want Microsoft to run it? Do you need it to be private? Or can you take what's there in the public cloud and save a little money? So these are all completely reasonable, and we're happy with any of these possibilities.
Mm-hmm. So let's say I'm a customer now, right? And maybe I have on-premise or I have no Link. If I have no Link, it's probably easy. But if I have on-premise, how actually would I go and migrate into the cloud?
Yeah. So this is a little more focused on, I want to keep this a little bit focused on Link Online Dedicated. But with Link Online Dedicated, you really can move the workloads at different paces. There's many customers that'll move Exchange first, Link first, SharePoint first, and that's something that we'll work with you to make your transition to the cloud as meaningful and easy for you as it can be. You know, we understand that for big, big enterprises, these different workloads move at different speeds for different reasons. We understand that the support desk sometimes needs time to bring over one workload at a time. In terms of adoption, training, you may be rolling out new clients with your migration. And for that reason, maybe it's a bigger project than just repointing a client at a cloud. It might be actually bringing a new client with the cloud. So these can all move independently. And especially for dedicated, that white glove service comes into play. And we have plenty of meetings with you to make sure that we know what you want and help you achieve it.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that, let's probably have a look into the features. And let's take Fernando here on the stage. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Fernando, so what are the features actually about dedicated?
Can you all right. talk about it? So you've decided to take the plunge into Link Online Dedicated, hosted by Microsoft. And it's important to note a couple things. First and foremost is, what's our starting point for deciding on the features that we introduce into a dedicated service offering from Microsoft? So the starting point is the on-premise product. Everything that we have on on-premise is fair game for introducing the service. But the decision point really becomes, again, serviceability of that, the unique topology that we have to put in place in order to essentially host the service on your behalf, provisioning complexities that come along with that, but also the foresight that we have in terms of the roadmap for the product overall. We actually take into deep consideration where we either know for sure the product is going to go or where we think that certain features are going to be going over time. So we try not to introduce something that may actually cause further complications down the road. So we're very, very careful about that. But you know, as mentioned before, we're open to the input that you provide. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is, well, what do I get in terms of what I've bought? When you work to get into dedicated, you actually work with an account team at Microsoft, and they'll work you through the licensing and how all that works. And there's a couple different flavors of what you can get, but essentially it boils down to two main areas. And it really comes down to, well, you know, I want everything except for basically voice and dial-in conferencing. Okay, so you basically get everything but that, and if you want it, you can get voice and dial-in conferencing. And a lot of our current dedicated customers are starting to make that move. We've seen very good adoption on voice, and we'll have a little bit more discussion on what that looks like just after I'm done. So what I want to walk you through is essentially about a, let's say, 5,000-foot level of what are the features that we've got. This isn't exhaustive. In fact, the best place to go see more detail what we do provide is you go to TechNet. We have a full inventory across the workloads, even not just Link, where you can actually see what we do it, how we do it, some limitations, and so on. And there's specific pages around SLAs, you know, so what we do promise in terms of availabilities and all that. So there's a lot more information. But I did want to just kind of provide sort of that basic introduction into what do we provide today, and a couple of quick peeks at what we're going to be providing very soon. So as you can see, in terms of the unified or now universal communications experience that we're starting to get into, we are providing, you know, access to every single client that you get on-prem. So Link 2013, you get the basic client from a licensing perspective that actually could be attractive for some of you because there aren't licensing implications for that one necessarily. The web clients, Mac is covered, VDI. So if you have a virtual deployment for your desktop users, think banking sector perhaps in branch offices, we got you covered there too. And then of course the mobile clients. We have full support for all the mobile clients that are coming out. As these features get lit up in the mobile clients, it tends to basically go live for you pretty quickly. We do take a checkpoint in case there's privacy or performance considerations for your environment, so we do open it up and say, do you want this before we just turn it on? In some cases, that might be different with the multi-tenant environment, just depending on how it's architected. But for us, we do a little bit more of that high touch back and forth with you to make sure that that's indeed something you want to go ahead and turn on. So we're connected, federation with Link. You've heard about the video federation with Link. As soon as that comes on, we'll be looking to introduce that in dedicated as well. Typical question I get is, well, what's the lag time? You know, you guys are coming out with CUs all the time, new updates in the clients, new updates in the server. We bundle that as part of the SLA. We get the CUs out there. Usually, I believe we say it's within 60 days. And certain client features, if there's no server impact, they're immediate. If there is server impact, we try to get them into either our monthly, quarterly, or biannual release cycle, depending on the impact to your environment. Now, a quick mention there, coming soon. So we do have these advisory boards for our customers are coming up very soon, and we'll introduce in more depth what these features are, but we will be introducing support for the Unified Communications web API. So if you're looking to do deep process integration in any of your line of business tools, this is the way to do it. So, I mean, this means that if you ever decide to move this, move your deployment either further, more into the cloud, so like a multi-tenant environment, or for whatever reason decide to go back on-premise, your investment isn't lost. It's basically a repointing of that custom application you've done to wherever your deployment is in the future. And then Bez, so BlackBerry integration. We actually had this in the service some time ago. There's a lot of customers who use BlackBerry still. Don't know why, but they do. It went away due to some complexities and what was going on in the BlackBerry space, but it's going to be coming back soon. In the voice section, again, we have a little bit more on voice in a bit, but so I'll give you just a quick view that we've got obviously full support for what you would expect here in terms of the soft phone experience for enterprise voice, a number of partners who provide equipment. And I'll mention that a little bit more again in a second as well. We have typical features like private lines for executives, so you can have a primary and a secondary line if that's what you want. Call parking features. E911 is something that we launched recently for U.S. customers who have regulatory requirements in that space. For voice connectivity, we've got two primary options, which we'll cover a little bit more in detail, but essentially, this covers your basic scenario where you may already have a SIP trunking provider and you want to bring them along. We've qualified many of the global providers around the world to date, so it tends to be relatively easy to connect to an existing service you might have. And if you're looking to do gradual migrations onto voice, we've got a mechanism to hook in with your existing PBXs. Quality of service tagging. You've probably seen across many of the sessions here at the Link conference, there's a lot of emphasis on network performance, making sure you've got good quality experience. Can't highlight that enough. It's a single bullet item here, but it's by far the most important thing that anybody has to do. So we spend a lot of time with particular voice customers, although it's applicable to all, to make sure that when they're going down this advanced path of deploying voice globally, that we go through things like making sure that they've got quality of voice, quality of service turned on, it's working correctly, we're monitoring it, and of course they have to go through a network assessment. I think we'll be covering a little bit more about that too. And then in the meeting space, again, we've got pretty much all the features that you would expect on-prem covered here. Outlook scheduling, so integration with Outlook, so you can do the one-click meeting setup is there. Multi-party PC audio video with and without PSTN, depending on whether or not you've purchased that. Meeting recordings, take care of that. Conferencing devices and video interop. This is highly asked from our customers. We want to make sure that we've got enough device footprint out there, so we do work with a lot of our partners to make sure that we've got good coverage. Video interop with existing systems, so if you've got Cisco implementations or Tanberg implementations on site, that don't natively work with the Link architecture, we've got some partners who've got some gateway products. You put them in between, and that'll help preserve your investment going forward. Large meeting sizes. This one's an interesting one. You heard a keynote that we're working on these new large meeting scenarios that are coming out. What this is not that promise. This is sort of an interim step there. As many of you know, Link 2010-2013 supports meeting sizes up to about 250 users. What we're saying with this is, depending on certain prerequisites, one of them being that you do have to be using voice, enterprise voice as part of the service, and performance assessments, network checks, we can bump you up to about 500 users, 500 user meeting sizes instead. But again, it's a very specific customer user scenario. You know, you have to meet some prerequisites to make sure that we've got you covered. What you heard at keynote is really looking a little bit further into the future and looking at a new sort of add-on feature to Link. You know, We don't really know exactly how that's going to work all about yet, but that will really, I think, take it to sort of the next level. And we will be looking to see how we can integrate that with dedicated in the future. Coming soon, there's been some client-side features that have come out, like Q&A Manager. So if you guys are used to using Live Meeting, for example, Q&A Manager will be basically like a bolt-on to your Link 2313 client, where you can have that same sort of function where during a meeting, you can have two people, one presenting and the other person then moderating any questions and taking care of answers. And then another big piece of it, the dial-in conferencing. So I mentioned voice and then dial-in conferencing. When it comes to business cases, the dial-in conferencing piece of it rules them all, really. I mean, this is where you as enterprises end up saving probably the biggest amount of money is by using the Link native capability for dial-in conferencing. Everything out of the box, you click the button in Outlook, schedule a meeting, populated with all the meeting details. If somebody actually wants to click it or dial the number, they can. Otherwise, it's a one-click link. You join the Link meeting, and everything pops up, and you're good to go. And that works across mobile devices now, too, so seamless experience all across the board. Now, on the back end, we actually provide quite a lot as well for our dedicated customers in terms of administration and control. Even though we run this as a service, we do have some customers who do want to have a little bit more hands-on contact with their deployment than others. Generally speaking, there was a slide earlier, and we probably didn't cover it as much as we should have, but part of this white glove service is the promise is that we do a lot of it on your behalf, and we certainly do, but there are customers who want to have a little bit more control, and to that effect, we've provided some of those things. So in terms of auditing and monitoring, again, big compliance piece of it. So we provide the ability to archive your IAMs. And then we give you direct access to via this customer data feed, where you can go in there and actually look at all the SQL databases like you would on-prem. So you can see your CDR, you can see your QoE, and you can see your IAM archive, down to, of course, the admins who have security control to see that, because there is obviously some PII there. And then, of course, we provide you the full breadth of the CDR and QoE reports like you would see out of the monitoring server. So again, much like you would have it on-prem, but without the hassle. We provide that to you. Administration-wise, you'll see some screenshots here. The first one is the monitoring reports. The second one is a custom KPI portal that we provide to all the dedicated customers. And it actually covers all the workloads, but I'm just showing you the Link one. And what you see here is very hard to read, of course, but there's a number of key KPIs that we've determined with feedback over time that customers really want to see. And these are not necessarily included in the monitoring reports. You can derive them from them, but we've decided to put them front and center to kind of help you decide what's going on in your environment. So obviously, SLA is the one over there, and it's always very close to 100%, if not there all the time. But then we have SLA by month. So we actually make sure that we're trending this, and you have visibility, just like we do, about what's going on. And then there's a series of KPIs that cover anything from adoption. So you want to keep tabs on how many users are using this. I've provisioned 100 users, 99 of them are using them. Great, I'm happy. I've provisioned 100, only 10 of them have started. What's going on? Why is my change management program not working? Stuff like that. Average minutes, duration of calls, all of that stuff. And it's all there. It's on a month-by-month basis. We have breakouts for device types, specifically mobility. So if you're curious about, well, how many people are using iPhones and iPads? How many people are using Windows phones? You'll see that. You'll see counts and amounts of that. And then in red down there, you can't tell, but those are some new KPIs that we've added for voice recently. So if you're using, you've turned on Enterprise Voice, you've got PSTN activity, you want to see, well, how many minutes am I now saving because I'm using Link versus whatever else I was using? So you'd be able to keep track of that. Per user configurations directly from your AD. So this is sort of the control that we provide you. As part of our promise to you in terms of control versus flexibility and configuration, we actually provide quite a lot of per user configurations, and we also provide over 50 global configuration. So global think, I want this applied to my entire organization. I don't want any distinction between what my users are doing versus, I've got 20 users in this office, and I happen to know that their WAN link is really bad, so I want to stop them from doing video. You can do that. And you do this directly from your Active Directory. There's no other special tool. You'll do this directly in your AD through some markup that we provide instructions on. That flows into your environment within hours, I believe. And your users automatically will get that provision through in-client provision. And then we do provide PowerShell access. This is a limited pilot right now. There's only a few commandlets. If any of you went to some of the other sessions here today, in Office 365 multi-tenant, for example, we provide a huge breadth of PowerShell commandlets if you actually want to get in there. In Dedicated, we've actually started small. Part of it because of, again, sort of the nature of the customers that we have, not a lot of them want to delve into PowerShell. Some of them are starting to get there. So we're going to grow this out gradually as well. And then from a network stack perspective, if you happen to be ready for IPv6, you know, we can handle that or dual stack it on a project basis and get that up and running. And then the last piece I wanted to cover is the hardware ecosystem. This is actually pretty important because you know, Link doesn't stand on its own because we need to have make sure that we've got good ways for our users to interact with the service. So we, as a company, have made a lot of investments with our partners. You see them here at the conference. All the devices are there. One of the key things about this is you do want to go out to TechNet again. We have a specific page for Link Online Dedicated that talks about which partners and which devices specifically will work with Dedicated. Because of the fact that you know, we have a unique provisioning model and there is a specific topology involved, it doesn't mean that every device that is Link qualified will work, but devices that are typically Link optimized, there's no issues because essentially we've actually developed the software behind the scenes and it's plug and play from our perspective. When you've got some of our partners who have their OSs on top of it and they say that they work with Link, it's fine, but we haven't necessarily done the validation extensively to make sure that every single use case will work. So we don't actually claim support for a lot of those devices. But what we have done in terms of, again, IP phones, video conferencing devices, I think we've got covered the most popular devices out there. And what we've also done is we've made sure that our partner qualification program, the UCOIP, Open Interoperability Program, has Dedicated as one of sort of the verticals, so that when a device is coming through, a partner actually decides that they can check the box and say, yes, I want to make sure this device is also qualified for Dedicated, in which case it shows up over here. And that's actually probably most important when it comes to our voice deployments, because there's a little bit more of hardware that's typically involved in there, depending on how you decide to set up your PSTN connectivity. And there we've probably done the best job so far in terms of streamlining when a device is qualified for Dedicated, or actually when it's qualified for Link, it's actually qualified for Dedicated automatically. So it does vary a little bit. Don't assume that it works for Dedicated. Check the site and ask your account team in particular to make sure that it's there. And the really fun part about being Dedicated, because there's so few customers, if there's a customer who says, I really want this device, you know, we work with you to qualify that device over time. So we might not be able to turn around within a week or a month, but we will work to make sure it's up there as soon as we can. Mm-hmm. So with that, I guess I'm handing it over.
Thank you, yeah. Thank you. So we talked about the availability of our cloud service, what kind of Link or general Link Exchange SharePoint cloud service we're offering. Let's probably go a little bit more into the deployment itself, and let's cover some very specific areas on how we deploy, actually, our services in Dedicated. Thomas, Andre. There's a clicker.
Thank you. Okay, so what I want to show to start off with is some topology information. This is where customers want to understand that in the Dedicated topology, we talk about voice, and the architecture of that is really where they want to understand what they're doing. So you have the data center, Office 365 Dedicated, Link is in there. You've heard about voice. You feel like it's a right fit. You want to know more. You've got your MPLS connections. you're satisfied with what's going on, and then we add this. So you'll notice that in the diagram, there's a carrier peering point. So the SIP trunk providers will come to, you can call it a carrier hotel, an edge site, a peering point, but it's not the data center in which the link topology lives. So it provides a common point for the carrier, and then, as Dan had on one of the earlier slides, the dark fiber getting underneath it, which Microsoft owns. So in this, you're basically adding, pick the carrier of choice. The OIP site is updated, and today, when a carrier is qualified, they are qualified for dedicated. It's the same test case is included. This is one option. The other option is you have an investment. You need to keep that investment. You have a use case scenario that is something that's not covered by the link offering. And you'll see that there's a session border controller. That is our entry point into your telephony environment. And then behind the SBC is your PBX infrastructure, as simple or as complex as it is. And from there, that's where you get your PSTN access. The reason that the slide did not drop the left-hand side for the carrier is to help illustrate that as a customer, you can do both at the same time. So we are working with at least two customers today that started on the left, and now they are adding the items on the right. And we've had two customers start on the right and begin to add on the left. And it all just sort of meets the needs. But as a generalization, the customers that start on the left and move to the right, they started on the left for dial-in conferencing, and then wanted to keep calls on net for routing into their environment. So here, it's just maybe a simpler illustration of what was said, but there's essentially the three topologies available. You take and you add a provider. You, on the far right-hand side, you use an on-premise SBC, or in the middle, you do a mix of the two. I would also say that we do have one customer who's using two separate carriers, one for Canada and one for the US. And then we talked about multi-regional customers. So you could use one carrier in North America, and you could use a separate carrier in Europe, depending on how your business model went, how the carrier coverage was. So those options exist. Just to let you know. And I realize that this is kind of high level. We would expect that if it interests you, that we would get into a conversation. We'll share with you probably more diagrams than you care to see. But you would love, your network team would like to see, your IT management. And then going with the theme of the map, the list of supported countries is online. But it would make for a poor eye chart as a slide. The link for those countries is in the note section of this PowerPoint, so when you download it. But this is just a visual representation of the coverage of countries that you can get for the regional coverage. I'm going to hand it over to Andre.
Thanks, Tom. And just so you know, there's 99 countries, quite easy to remember, 99 countries there on that list. So I'm not going to plow through this list of SIP trunk provider items and considerations through every single one. What we do find from a customer perspective is that when they think about how they're going to connect for PSTN breakout, is that when they think about a service offering, which is essentially what dedicated is, it's a service offering for our customers, that when they think about the cloud, they don't want to begin to manage PSTN and another provider for that. And for us, as we support customers going forward, we really focus on how is the easiest way to manage PSTN and access to those services that you need without having to manage another essentially service and an operation. So we tend to work very closely with our SIP carriers and trunk providers. So essentially when you see from an operational standpoint, oh my gosh, it's the random event that I cannot make an outbound call for a reason, we work with the carrier on your behalf as we sign an agreement to basically troubleshoot that instance without you needing to be on the call. So imagine an end-to-end service from Microsoft working with your selected SIP carrier that enables you to then not have to worry about that in the event that something was to go wrong. It's an extremely, as we say, white glove service being used quite a few times today. Essentially, that's what we're trying to provide here. And these items here are all obviously of interest to those customers that look to this to be an end-to-end service with SIP trunk providers and the considerations that you need to think about. The business case, as Fernando was just talking about, is a tremendous one from an ROI perspective when we talk about bringing those conferencing minutes onto your network and utilizing those users from a mobility standpoint that need to access via PSDN. And again, the SBC integration for us still enables you to still hold on to that tremendous PBX that you've got sat in your infrastructure. But maybe you need to still have some of the feature functionality that you may not get within the cloud that you still need on-premise. Different businesses still have those requirements. Not all of those are going to go away overnight. We make sure we still maintain those business requirements that don't move away and make sure your SBC is there to help us. One of the things we do say about the SBC, though, is that we support to the SBC. We do not support and manage your SBC. So this is one of the key considerations on this slide is, are you ready as a company or as an enterprise to actually either work with a partner to manage the SBC, or do you have the internal expertise to manage the SBC yourself? Key considerations when thinking about how you're going to manage an SBC and interop into your PBX. Again, you and a partner or a partner will manage your interop into your PBX and the configuration and the dial plans. It's really important that you get the right partner or have the right staff inside of your organization to manage this. Without this, your project will fail. Okay? Just sorry to bring drama at that stage, but it will. Okay? It will fail. And so now, as we just spoke about those 50 customers that are in dedicated, 25% of our customers within dedicated now are either doing voice right now, signing voice, or deploying voice right now in the cloud. So we're seeing a real uptick in our voice journey. And so what are the considerations we've seen with their voice journey, and where have we seen success and failures? So from a network assessment standpoint, every single dedicated customer that we have has to take a network assessment. Microsoft obviously has an SLA to maintain, and I don't think anyone would agree that you'd walk into a contractual agreement without really understanding the network assessment and the quality. That's one key part of the discussion. But really, we want you to have the best link experience. That's why we have a network assessment. That enables you as the customer to actually see how your network's performing right now. We use QoE data as well from the existing link topology to combine what is a one-step-in-time view of your network and also traditional QoE data that we've seen on the slide a second ago that Fernando was talking about. And we bring those two things together to make sure we're ready to deploy link over and across your network. Device selection is really an important piece for us. You must get the right device. Voice sometimes in the cloud, we always talk about, oh, it could be anywhere, it could be the internet, it could be MPLS. It could be that your user has the worst headset in the world and has food stuck in the end of the mouthpiece and they can't hear anybody or speak. There's something as simple as that, that you know, the wrong device can really hose a great experience for every user. No one ever blames the device, they blame Link. And that for you will drive adoption down, and then we're in a, you know, not a downward spiral that you don't really want to see. As you can see, we have a PBX up there in the top right-hand corner. Obviously, we really do value the integration with the SBC and PBX to make sure we maintain that. Really important, though, you get the right integration partner, or you know that. I mentioned that a second ago. And E164, make sure your AD is correct, right? It's something that we can find it can take customers an extremely long time to get their AD in the correct format. And without that, you get the ability to click on someone's number and not be able to dial them, which is not much fun for those users from a user case experience. So our average deployment duration right now is around about 16 to 24 weeks. My team work with you from the start and engage with the account teams, and we make sure we work with you right the way through the deployment phase and beyond to make sure that we're driving adoption and really making sure this link deployment goes just beyond, okay, the service is up and we walk away into the sunset. There's no value in that for anybody. Adoption is vital to the success of any product, and with Link, we know that's most definitely the truth. So the training and adoption and readiness team, we partner with them, I know they're here on site this week, I think. They are around here, so if you've got further questions, please feel free to reach out and I can get you in contact with them. And that's a free service that Microsoft provides for you to enable yourselves to adopt to the cloud and drive adoption and get the training needs required so you're able to move to the cloud faster and the culture change from maybe moving from a traditional PBX is not so severe for your users where they can get the correct information and move forwards. And so if you've got any questions about Link or Enterprise Voice specifically within Dedicated, please feel free to email asklinkdvoice@microsoft.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also reserved some time actually to ask questions or maybe some scenarios right now, so we have the time. If you choose to write us actually the question, then you will probably address basically the same people as you can see here in the room and some others as well from Microsoft. Let me ask you, any questions? Please.
So I'm actually working with a couple of your customers on the voice deployments.
Yes.
I'm going to chat with Tom after this. But so there's not much of a feature gap between dedicated and on-premise Link. I'm just curious for customers, obviously they're large-scale customers who are in a dedicated environment, I guess the specific question is the call admission control. I mean, is that something that's eventually going to get obviously, point-to-point calling really doesn't have too much of an effect on the network, but once we inject that SBC and start calls the PSTN, that becomes pretty important. So is that something that's coming? Or?
Who wants? Fernando?
Sure. Thank you.
I mean, in short, no, it's not coming to dedicated specifically. The nature of the feature, the way it's built for an on-premise deployment makes a lot of sense. But for the nature of how we run this as a service with essentially a single connection point to your network would essentially create one behavior in terms of network congestion, which means it would lock out all your users, which is not what you really want. So we provide guidance for how to achieve essentially what you do want to do. Without obviously locking out users from actually being able to make calls and using Link all up. So those things that we would recommend, for example, would be implementation of quality of service tagging, as you would know, redundant internet connections in satellite offices, for example, if for whatever reason, for example, your satellite office disconnects from your corporate network, so you can still access the Link service over the internet versus through the core backbone. And obviously, what else do we recommend? Those are the two big ones? Okay. Yeah.
The only other thing I would add is if you think about the treatment for CAC, is there's a certain amount of bandwidth that you have. What do you want to do, or what experience do you want your users to have when that happens? And that's maybe the chain of thought that we'd like to think about.
Right? Sure. And just a quick follow-up. So there's plenty of redundancy built to the Microsoft network, obviously, for good reason. If, you know, these customers have dual data centers and they want to bring in, you know, have an SBC at each location and bring in two separate SIP trunking providers, is that, I'm guessing that's supported, right? Pointing back to the cloud?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about the topology, the redundancy and all that.
Nope, I have to give you the microphone.
Thanks. Yeah, it's certainly supported within reason. We absolutely recommend and expect that every region has a minimum of two SBCs with that type of connectivity, so we can meet our compliance requirements with you for things like failover, business continuity. These things are critical. If you want to bring in multiple SIP trunks into our data center, I think you heard some examples of that earlier. Where we're already doing it, so the answer is yes. Where we have some difficulty is, let's say you had something like 300 branch offices, and you had an SBC in every branch office, right? That becomes then a scaling problem for us in terms of peering and management. So that's sort of a little further outside of the spectrum of what we're comfortable with today. As we build more automation and have more expertise in terms of driving down the labor costs for some of these things and bringing up the optics, even for our on-prem admins, maybe that changes. But today, we think about a minimum of 2 SBCs per geographical region if you want the on-prem option. And if you want to go more than that, then you know, that's a conversation you should have with us. And generally, you'll find there's a lot of flexibility as part of that white glove service.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I got a question.
Oh, perfect.
Can I give you a hand? What have you seen with your customers on how they run those SBCs? Do we use the HAPs? Do we run them standalone? You know, can we guard against? Mm-hmm. It really comes down to me for do we want to drop 500 calls and then they pick up the phone and the next call goes out? Or do we run the risk of bringing down the whole telephony environment together?
Right, right. So do you want to take that?
Sure. I mean, thank you.
So for on-prem SBC guidance, there are some design patterns that we need just because of link, right? 2013 gives us a few extra design patterns in terms of failover and routing. So the 2013 story is better than the 2010 story. I think that it's still going to be a bit of a case-by-case basis. Some of it's even going to depend on the infrastructure that you have behind the SBC and what we're capable of in terms of that infrastructure if we're spilling over traffic or rerouting traffic. So I'm not sure there's an easy answer there, but that's where we look to some of the engineers on Andre's team to help make that happen with you. So that would be like Larry Felt, Rob Pitfield in the back of our audience that's here today. Those are guys that can help work with the partners. And I think, you know, the more partners that do this with Dedicated, the more we can write it down and make that available to every customer on Dedicated.
Mm-hmm. And just to add, I was going to say, Danny,
more questions.
It's not really it's kind of like if you want to chop your arm off or take your leg off in the scenario that you just described, right? Do we want to do it this way and then have the risk of running this or have the risk of running that?
There's
risk both ways, yeah. And I think that's where we've got to work together to really understand how we mitigate the risk overall and then plan and design your infrastructure to make sure that it works specifically on how your users are expecting it to pretty much function. It kind of sounds crazy, but it's some users and some companies really don't get too terrified about, you know, if it goes down, it's okay, I'll pick up my cell phone. And for other users, it would be, if it goes down, I'm all going to start screaming and calling the help desk and we're going to have a huge issue on our hands. It's the type of culture that your company has, and obviously I know your company, so we can work with you directly and really make sure we give the best advice on how to design that from a high availability and reduce that risk that you're calling on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got another.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, please.
Just real quick, I heard you talking about turning off the different modalities. You know, is there any kind of if-then logic that we can introduce there where keep us from breaking the law, right? You know, yet when you said that, I started thinking, ooh, that might be it. You know, if we can run some kind of logic against that, maybe by subnets or, you know, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out how to deal with India, you know, and countries like that.
So good question,
it's really problematic.
I think the best answer for that is we should buy you a drink tonight. And then we'll keep talking. Okay, other questions? I think, Brian, I thought I saw you had your hand up.
Yeah, so for all the reasons that you guys already talked about, in addition to that, we acquire a lot of companies. Mm-hmm. Well, we have been on an acquirement kick, but it takes months to stand up an MPLS to an acquired company and to get them on our network and start to do that. So one of the other reasons that you may have mentioned, or I didn't hear it, but was speed to deliver services. Mm. So inherently, if we go to the cloud, what kind of capacity is built into the architecture,
right,
and what's that threshold before you say, I need to add additional services to pull to support that?
So I might need an exact figure check, but typically we're built for thousands of users above capacity, but not tens of thousands of users above capacity. So if you are going to be adding a 20,000, 30,000 range of seats because of an acquisition, that's something that we ask you to advise us of, and then we can just make sure that the infrastructure is ready. Often it is. But if you give us the chance, then we'll make sure it is. But the short answer is thousands, no problem, tens of thousands. That's something where we want to check our figures. The other thing I would say is, this may not work for you as well, Brian, for the sector you're in, but for many other companies that do the acquisition, one of the things that we see happening is they'll initially bring their clients to us as internet clients. So that way, even if they haven't built in the network, they can still get link dedicated on day one through remote access. But of course, if you're in the financial space, in the government space, public sector, often you still will want that private network along with the private deployment. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions? Please, go ahead.
The simple one is probably, is there a cost for the network assessment? Is it a one-off cost or just part of your contract?
Yeah, so you've got the mic, but yeah, I'll just talk over Banana Shoulder. There is a cost for the network assessment.
Yeah, there is a cost for the network assessment, and you work with Microsoft Consultancy Services as part of your account team, and they'll work with you to understand what that is. It is a requirement, a prereq for all deployments. And depending on the scale and size of your network and where we want to place the specific probes, and we have the probe placed within our data center as well, so it's an end-to-end network assessment that we place. It's a true representation of what the path you're going to take for your link deployment. And for us, it's really a good way to benchmark where your network is and how you need to get ready for link. So I can give you that information, and the account team is a procedure that we follow to make sure we get the right people engaged.
And the unfair question, because it's based on the stuff that you guys told me this morning about SDN, so I went to the session. So I guess what I'd ask is, when will the SDN stuff come into Link Online?
You can have that back, Fernando.
I'm glad I went to the sessions too, by the way. So my understanding of where the SDN technology is, it's still in early beta phase. And I actually went to some of the sessions today for the same reason, to kind of figure out when some of the partners would be ready, because there's a software component to it, but there's still a hardware component to it. And the hardware providers, they're in beta stage with us on this. So they actually didn't provide a date. I don't think Microsoft is providing a date yet. I would be excited to be able to bring this into dedicated as well because of the network complexities involved. So all I can say is I don't have line of sight to when we'll be able to do it, but as soon as our partners, along with Microsoft, decide that it's ready for prime time, we'll certainly be looking to deploy it out. Keep in mind, though, I mean, deploying an SDN, part of it's going to be Microsoft's going to have to do some work, but a lot of it has to be on your side to do the work. I mean, it's much like a network assessment. You're going to go in, you're going to inventory everything you've got. You got to decide that you want to switch out some switches, some routers, or you're going to be able to upgrade it. I think it's going to be a significant investment, but it's going to pay off in the long run. It's not something that Microsoft turns on a knob and everything is wonderful after that. So it's a long road as well.
Is that something that's worth taking to
the
cab? Help you guys out?
I'll be a cab, so I've heard it. Yeah, you can bring it in again. So CAB is, we mentioned it briefly, it's a customer advisory board, so we hold two of these. Basically, they're mini conferences for just our dedicated customers. They come in for 2 days, just the customers that exist, not prospective customers. And we spend 2 full days with them, just walking them through all sorts of innovation, features that are coming, taking a lot of feedback, listening in very detailed level to day-to-day problems. So it's very much a deep session with customers, lots of breakouts, that sort of thing. And it changes a little bit year to year, and it's coming up in about a month. So we go to a very different level of depth across workloads. So it's across Link, Exchange, SharePoint, identity, networking. We cover all sorts of topics.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
You were talking about quality of service. So you do quality of service for enterprise voice. What about meeting itself?
Do you want to take it? So quality of service for meetings.
Okay.
So QoS, by definition, is for audio and video. and we support quality of service for both. In terms of the meeting, and I guess you're asking in terms of how do we gauge whether a meeting's working well. Well, I mean, built into the product, obviously, is you know, we have all sorts of tracking that go into the clients for every single session that happens, and we monitor QoE. But we also provide you the ability to monitor QoE as well to see how things are going.
So the question is, can we do QoS through ports? We can certainly give you guidance on how the client behaves. We do, on our server-side deployment, use a fixed, predictable range of ports that you can use to go after solving QoS in this fashion. There's a couple corner cases that are a little bit problematic, things like edge scenarios where one client is out on the internet, one's internal, the port range expands a bit. If you're using some of those partner devices, like a standalone desk phone, right, that's gonna use a different port range than the desktop clients where you can manage it and constrain the ports. So what we try to do is encourage you to use the software-based approach where you ask the link clients to tag voice and video. And we do the same thing. On our server side, we ask our servers to tag voice and video. That way, you don't have to manage a wide range of ACLs across your routers for QoS. But it is an option. I mean, we can give you that guidance and you can implement it. It may become slightly brittle as well. You know, over time, the port ranges will change a little bit and you'll have to update. So. Again, for that reason, we're trying to keep it to the actual endpoints, marking, and then encouraging you to have your network find a way to trust those markings.
Mm-hmm. It is predictable, and it is adjustable, and that gives us time to get our yes. network into a state.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Let me just add on again. I mean, so I did mention that we provide access to the QoE databases so that you can monitor that yourselves. We have access to it on a more limited basis, obviously, because of the PII involved. So there's only certain ops people who have access to it, and they take a proactive and a reactive viewpoint on it. There's actually a lesser known feature that I don't think a lot of our customers have taken advantage of, but there was a request for it. But there is an ability to hook up a third-party tool for monitoring that QoE database queue. So it's something outside of Link. You can get it, put it in your network, and have your admins just be notified when things don't meet thresholds. So there is that ability as well if you wanted to take a little bit more of a proactive stance in your own environment to kind of keep track of what's going on a daily basis. It's actually fairly agnostic. We basically just ask for the URL for the application to publish to. So we set up that trusted connection. So any third party application that works via that mechanism is fine.
So I see we're at the 2 minute warning.
Mm-hmm. Yellow alert.
Yeah. Do you want to take us home?
Yeah, absolutely. So. When you download the slides, there's some more information that you find in the slide deck. So some general description about Office 365, what we talked about private, and also the Office 365 multi-tenant offering. There's some more information about the different plans, so in dedicated, right? So from only IM, conferencing, voice, and so on. There's a lot of content, actually, so if you're interested in the details, then please have a look. And, well, if you have any questions, then the email address is was part of the deck, so just email us. We are more than happy to help you, and also to see actually if we can probably win you as a dedicated customer on our Microsoft Cloud. Well, thanks to the audience. Thank you very much to all the speakers, right? And I hope the session was valuable to you. And well, I think there's party time in an hour or something. Right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let me see. Nope, it's not anymore. You find all the description and information for the party in your badge and description and manual, the manual for the Link conference, okay? Everything is there. Thank you very much. Thank you.